information or other information, call 642-2826. This has been a public service announcement of WBAI on behalf of the Democratic Socialists of America. See you at the conference.
On the next Beyond the Pale, the Progressive Jewish Radio Hour, on April 12th, Wednesday, from 2 to 3 p.m., we will feature a Passover show where you'll hear Rabbi Sam Barth and Brad Lander discuss the Passover launching of a Jewish campaign to confront the city's moral and fiscal crisis. We'll also feature Arthur Waskow, who will talk about the origins of the Freedom Seders in the 1970s and report from the latest feminist Seders created by Mayan, plus Passover songs. That's Wednesday, April 12th, 2 to 3 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM.
It's 10 o'clock. Time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. It couldn't get much worse.
Good evening, everybody. This is Emmanuel Goldstein here with another edition of Off the Hook, where we update you on the latest happenings in cyberspace and all kinds of other things going on the net, in the phone networks, and just possibly affecting you in your day-to-day average life. But first, it's time for another in our installment of The Quest for ISDN. Day 15. Well, Fiber Optic, it's been 15 days now, 2 weeks ago this Wednesday, where we started our humble quest.
Yes.
To get ISDN lines installed. And, well, I had a very good week last week. I was looking forward to Friday. You know, Friday was the day when the phone company man was going to come by and install my ISDN line. Friday morning, I set my alarm clock, and I was up at 8:55 a.m. waiting for the ISDN man to come. I had never seen one before. I didn't know what they looked like. But I was prepared for anything. But you know what I wasn't prepared for?
What's that?
12 noon. 12 noon came, and it went. And no ISDN man in sight. So I figured, you know, maybe they're a little delayed. You know, sometimes they say they'll come in the morning, and they actually come in the afternoon. You know, I'm an understanding kind of guy. I realize sometimes the phone company doesn't quite get a handle on things. But around 2 o'clock or so, I figured I'd call just to make sure they weren't having problems. You know, real bad problems. And I called them up, and they transferred me all over the place. And finally they found somebody that understood what this ISDN business was. And they said, "No, sir, you never had an appointment." Now, What's funny about this is I remember distinctly having a conversation with somebody where we were asking, you know, is morning better, afternoon better? What in the world were we talking about if we weren't talking about an appointment? Just when we're at our peak mood or what? Obviously, we made an appointment. They're now saying that they never made the appointment in the first place. So we had a bit of a disagreement on that. Then the ISDN person, and there really is only one that I seem to reach, started complaining to me about how the engineering department never calls them back. The engineering department has to analyze each line, and when they do that, they get back to the person that gets back to the customer. And this representative was saying to me, they just never call back. So I don't know, you know, what I can do. And I'm like, you're the phone company. You're complaining to me that people within the phone company aren't calling you back. I am the customer, and I can't even get an ISDN line installed, much less have somebody even tell me that it's possible to do it in the first place. So they promised this week sometime to get back to me when the engineering people got back to them. So basically, I'm even further back than I was 2 weeks ago because there's no promise on the horizon of anybody coming by to install an ISDN line. I've already been through this a couple of times. They've changed their rates. They flip-flopped on a couple of major issues as to surcharges or no surcharges. So right now, I'd have to say, I don't know what's going on. How about you? Are you doing any better?
Well, I'm in a similar boat. I don't exactly know what's going on. Only when they said that they were going to have an installation done, they canceled it immediately, and I was told that the person that took the information was going about the whole thing the wrong way. You can't just order a normal phone line for ISDN service. There's all this provisioning done that they have to install. Just like you have to go and buy ISDN equipment, they have to provision for ISDN equipment in the central office for the other end of your line.
But your central office is different. Your central office has this virtual ISDN business.
No, actually, from what I've been told, I'm actually able to get direct ISDN.
You are? Okay.
That's what I was told.
Well, not according to 1-800-GET-ISDN.
No, well, I don't even go by that anymore. It seems like nobody updates that.
We should tell 1-800-ISDN to 1-800-GET-BENT.
Yes.
I don't think they know what's going on themselves.
No. But so now the latest was that I talked to my representative yesterday, who said that there was supposed to be a meeting with the product manager for residential ISDN. And mind you, there's one product manager for residential ISDN who's like the head of basic rate ISDN. And then mm-hmm. they have another product manager who's head of primary rate ISDN. Uh-huh. And there's one each of these people who do whatever it is that they do at 9X at 1095 on 6th Avenue. And so my representative said that she had to wait to hear back from whatever the result of this meeting was today, which I have no idea why they're having a meeting or why they need to have a meeting. And to make matters even
worse...
They
have to have a meeting because two people have ordered ISDN and they don't know what to do.
Yeah, that's true. To make matters even worse, she came back and told me something that didn't make me rest very easily, but that she was told by the product manager that she wasn't really certain, but that X25 access, that is low-speed packet access on the D channel, may not be accessible. It may not be available to me. And I thought that was pretty ridiculous. Why?
It doesn't make any sense.
It makes no sense at all, no.
Let's come up with an analogy as to real phone service, what they're saying to you.
It's kind of like saying that, let's think of something.
Can't think of anything?
I'm trying to. I'm tempted to say it's like saying you can order touch-tone service, but your touch-tones won't work.
That doesn't make any sense.
No, well, neither does this.
I get it. Okay. Yeah. Well, continue with your saga here.
So as the saga goes, we're pretty much left at the point where I didn't want to call back today just to find out that they didn't really find out anything new. So I was going to wait until tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to call my representative again tomorrow. And if things still seem kind of confused, I was thinking maybe of having her let the product manager in on the fact that we're doing this live every Wednesday night on a radio show.
No, we can't do that, because if we do that, that's giving us an unfair advantage. I'd rather just sort of do this quietly to all of New York until 9X gets its act together.
Well,
because everyone out there wants to know how this is going to turn out.
Well,
they
want
to order
There is a flip side. It's a two-edged sword.
Okay.
I mean, the obvious flip side is that I want ISDN. now.
Well, yes.
I wanted it months ago.
I realize that, but the fact of the matter is that we cannot use our public celebrity status here as a bargaining chip. It's just not right.
I don't know how long I could hold out on that if things start getting really ridiculous, I don't think we'll have any choice.
I'm not gonna resort to that. However, I may resort to my Neanderthal barbaric violent techniques and go down to the central office with a sledgehammer. That's a possibility. I just might do that and install ISDN for them.
Well, at the very least, what I was considering doing, if they seem to be pig-headed about this whole low-speed packet.
It's not that they're pig-headed. It's that they're, brain-reduced or something. They just don't seem to be able to think in ISDN terms.
Yeah, that could be it.
I mean, people hear us talking about this, they don't even know what ISDN is, and we don't really know what it is because we haven't really used it yet. We want to use it.
I mean, you know what it is. I have used it.
But you don't really know what it is until you have it for days at a time.
Yeah, until I'm actually used to it. And I could actually say it's become a fixture in my household.
Uh-huh.
Then you can actually know it.
Right.
Yeah. Well, what I was thinking of doing, if they insist on being ridiculous about the whole thing, is fax them an actual service order that they would enter into their computer just in case they...
One of their own service orders?
Yeah.
How would you get a hold of one of those?
Oh, don't worry. Actually, we already have some of those in our possession.
Uh-huh.
But, I thought it might be useful because, in fact, we should mention, if we haven't already, that the ISDN training course for the telephone companies is held in Bell Atlantic.
Now, wait a minute. That's a competing company. Well, it's not a competing company, but it's one of
the other regional Bells.
Totally different company. They don't even train their own people?
Well, the interesting thing is that Bell Atlantic, from what I've heard, has the largest installed base of ISDN subscribers than any other place in the country. I believe Pacific Telesis is second. And because of this fact, they've sort of been delegated as being the ISDN training people.
Well, it's all kind of developed in New Jersey anyway, isn't it?
Yeah, because they're so close to Bellcore, so it's very convenient.
Mm-hmm.
But I've actually seen the training manual.
Right.
Which is specifically put together and geared towards each of the specific regional Bells.
I'd like to ask some of our New Jersey listeners if residential ISDN over there carries that one penny a minute digital surcharge.
Actually, I was told that in Bell Atlantic, and I don't know if this is all throughout Bell Atlantic, but at least in the area that used to be C&P, Chesapeake and Potomac, that they're charging up to a nickel a minute.
A nickel a minute?
Yeah.
You mean things can get actually worse than 9X?
That's what I've been told.
Whew. That's a scary thought. Let's hope you were told wrong.
It was a pretty reliable source, and he only stressed the fact that everyone should stop making data calls as soon as possible and start doing the whole ISDN spoofing thing. Actually making a voice call and actually sending data.
Sending data over the voice.
Yeah, pad. Data over the voice channel.
I see. Well, if they can figure out a way to tax that, I'm sure they will. Thing is, they're kicking themselves by doing this. They're shooting themselves in the feet because by crippling the data industry, people are going to use their services all the less. And
yeah.
When competition springs up, as it will, well, it's going to be bad for them.
Yeah.
So you all better get right at this time, because it might be no next time, y'all.
Well, we have an interesting article sent to us. This is from the Upper West Side Resident. How many of you have ever heard of this magazine? Wow. Okay, we have some New Yorkers here. I want to read you a couple of things about the information in the Superhighway as they describe it. And it seems like a fairly good article for the most part, but I'm sure there are some misconceptions here. Okay, and I'd like to tackle these one by one. At present, to become an officially connected computer or a node on the internet, you need a powerful computer. Yes or no?
I would say not.
Okay. A data line with a 56K or greater connection.
No.
Okay.
No.
an approved and registered domain name.
No, you don't need that either.
And at least $10,000 invested in hardware, software, and phone line connections.
No, No, that would be
yeah. All right, well, explain to us quickly then what you do need.
What's the exact phrasing they used at the opening?
To become an officially connected computer or a node on the internet, you need a powerful computer. You don't need a powerful computer.
No, you can use almost any PC or Mac.
All right. A data line with a 56K or greater connection.
No, in fact, you could use, I know people that are even, God forbid, using 9600 BPS modems, but you could use 14.4 or 28.8.
All right, this is the one that I'm curious about, an approved and registered domain name. You don't even need that?
No, actually, because most places find it just a lot more convenient to assign you a static address on the internet. Just, it might not be what you want, and it might cost you slightly extra to register something that you want, but you can actually do that yourself. And it's free to register a domain on the net.
And at least $10,000 invested in hardware, software, and phone line connections.
No, in fact, this goes back to the first question.
Mm-hmm.
You can use most any computer with a high-speed modem.
So, a couple hundred bucks.
Yeah, I mean, a modem is going to run you about $200, a 14.4 modem,
mm-hmm.
a 28.8, slightly more. And if you already own a Mac or a PC, you're halfway there, you're more than halfway there. And you'll probably end up paying about $25 a month on time. Typically for a slipper PPP connection, which, as long as you stay connected, makes you a node on the internet.
The basic tools or hardware for your online adventures are a computer, preferably a 386 or higher, with at least 4 megs of RAM and a modem.
Yeah, you could say that. It is preferable to have at least a 386 on the PC side.
Think of this process as working something like your fax machine, but you are transferring bytes of data, text, graphics, sound, video, directly from your computer through a regular household phone line.
Well, when I think of a fax machine, it makes me really bored. So I think that's a pretty bad analogy.
Well, I mean, the net is supposed to be boring. If we think of it in too exciting a term, you come up with things like hackers, and that's bad.
Oh, yeah, that's true. You can't be too creative on the net. It's
illegal.
You
can't be too creative, no. You don't necessarily need a dedicated phone line and can use one line if you don't anticipate that your online time will interfere with your phone calls. Callers would get a busy signal, but you can have your phone company install a voice messaging service on your line so you can then retrieve messages that were left while you were surfing around cyberspace.
Wonderful.
So it's more money for the phone companies. There are lots more alternatives than that. Why don't you just get another a line that hunts over,
yeah.
You know, and that way you can have the phone ring and pick it up while you're on the line. Or basically have one line as a modem line and don't take phone calls on it. Because once you're online, it's not something you want to get offline to take a phone call. They're two totally different things. It's like imagine if every time you had to speak, you had to hang up your modem. You know, it would be inconvenient. And the two are as different as that. A voice call and a data call really are two totally different things.
Right, you should just get ISDN.
Yeah, that would be nice. Now, with ISDN, you wouldn't have to get a second line, right?
No, you could have one line with voice and data over that same line.
See, that's the magic right there. Okay, just one other brief thing in this article, which I think we should point to. I don't know how many people get this, this Uptown West Side resident. I guess Uptown West Side residents probably get it. It would be pretty funny, though, to put out a magazine for the downtown east side people and call it Uptown West Side Resident. You know, make it seem like you're trespassing on their territory. And you'd really annoy them, too, because they wouldn't be able to get one. Subscribing to a commercial online service such as one of the biggies, Prodigy,
ooh,
America Online, or CompuServe, or a smaller one such as Echo, The Well, or Women's Wire. Remember, however, when you are on these services, you are not on the internet itself, but are in a completely separate place, their private computer system. Some of these services may give you a gateway to the internet, but only a few give you complete internet access.
Yeah, actually, the biggies that they mentioned don't really give you
the
any
The biggies are the ones that don't give you internet access.
They give you email and maybe Usenet news, but that's about it.
But I think those other ones, Echo, The Well,
yeah,
things like that, they give you real internet access if that's what you want.
That's true, yeah.
You don't have to become a node on the net to get real internet access.
Nope.
And for those systems that are in New York, the average price is about between $15 and $20 a month.
Yeah.
And you get virtually everything.
Yeah, and again, if you want to get slipping or PPP, the going rate on most reasonably priced services is $25 a month on time.
Right. That's
if they say anything more than that, you should look elsewhere.
True. So that's where the net stands. Again, thanks to the person sending that in. And our address to send other articles in is WBAI, 505 8th Avenue, New York, New York, 10018. Attention, Off the Hook. We'll be taking phone calls in just a couple of minutes. You know, I've got another phone company story, which I guess I should have mentioned before, but it's not really related to ISDN. It's related to good old-fashioned incompetence of the analog sort. Now, this is particularly annoying. You know why?
Why?
I made a very, very simple request. I had one of these phone lines that was, it was kind of paired up, you know? You have two phone lines, one phone bill. Do you understand how that works?
Right.
Back in the days when they had these things called auxiliary phone lines, it made sense to do it this way because you had one bill, a reduced rate on the second phone line, and you save some money. And you save some accounting, too, because you only had one phone bill to thumb through. Now, I figured since they did away with that discount for auxiliary lines, what's the point of having, you know, two phone lines showing up on one phone bill? Why not just have two different phone bills? That way accounting is actually easier because you can look at one, see what calls were made, look at the other, see what calls were made, etc. So I told the phone company, this was a couple of months ago actually, please split up these lines. Send me, one phone bill over here, one phone bill over there for this line. Great, you know, how hard could that be for the phone company to master? You're making a face. You really think it could be that hard?
I'm skeptical.
Well, the first thing they did was mail me this nice little piece of paper that you could see through a window envelope that announced to the world what my secret authorization code was. Now, for those of you that don't know, anybody can get a secret authorization code on your phone bill. All right, it allows only you to call up and get information about your phone bill.
Which I'm never asked for.
Really?
Never.
Well, you're supposed to be. They're supposed to ask you for it every single time. It can be two kinds of passwords. One can be a word, which they don't ask you for all the time. And the other can be, I think it's a three-digit number, which, according to the representative I spoke to, they described their screen to me. It pops up in the middle of the screen, and it's really hard to avoid. But apparently it is possible to avoid.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah, because I'm not asked for it all the time either. But I used this system for a couple of years. It was nice. You know, it tended to work until they sent me this blaring announcement in the mail. Just because, apparently, since I separated the two lines, they felt compelled to tell me what my authorization code was in case I forgot it. And there it was. And I, of course, had to call them up and say, look, you guys, now I have to change it because you people are morons. I don't talk this rudely to them, but that's the tone that's in my in the background when I'm speaking to them. Why did you send me a piece of paper notifying me of my code when I knew what it was? You knew I knew what it was. I've had it for years. Now we've got to change it. And the representative said to me, well, you know, if we change it, it's simply going to it's going to happen again. You know, they're going to send you another form. And it's this like Kafka-ish nightmare of someone in a bureaucratic office someplace constantly sending out these memos announcing to the world what my code is, when I just want to have a secret code that nobody knows except me and the phone company, maybe. Although I don't know if they even know it at this point. So after a long time arguing, going back and forth, I managed to get them to agree to give me a new code and not send it out. We'll see if that happens. Probably get about 50 of them in the mail. But that was not the worst of it. The worst of it was when I got my phone bill. Yeah, they managed to do it. They split up the two lines. One line was over on one bill. One line was over on the other. But, you know, on the second line, guess what was on it?
A charge to do this.
Well, yeah, there was a charge, and I knew there was a charge, $10. $10 to do that simple push button or whatever to separate the two phone bills. Fine. Okay, $10, I guess. You know, I don't have a choice in the matter. But no, not only was there a $10 charge, they charged me for a premise visit, they charged me for a new phone jack, they charged me for a network interface, they charged me as if they had come and installed a brand new phone line for a line that's existed for over a year. Now, I cannot believe this. So I just called them up, and I just sort of said to them, you know, I was very nonchalant about it. I just said, you know, I split up these two lines, and you guys charged me for a visit and a jack and a network interface. I don't understand this. All I did was separate the two lines. What's going on here? And they went through this whole big thing, putting me on hold, transferring me to music and all that kind of thing. And finally they came back and just said, oh, the amount of your credit is this. Okay, thank you, bye. As if, okay, he found out about it. He's he's too smart for us. Let's just give him the credit and hope he doesn't tell anybody. Well, guess what? I did tell somebody. So watch your phone bills, folks. When you do anything on your phone bill, who knows what they're going to do to you? I mean, imagine. There should be some sort of a safeguard to prevent that from happening. This means they can just, you know, hit a button and charge somebody for a phone line that got installed that doesn't even exist. You know, I always thought that they'd have to, you know, install a phone line before they did this. But no, they don't have to do anything. They just... some incompetent person someplace or some malicious person someplace just has to hit the right keys and whammo, you're charged. So that was, it was $100.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, most people notice a $100 increase in their phone bill, but I guess there's a fair number that don't. And I hasten to say that a lot of people out there, a lot of our listeners have probably been victimized one way or the other. Whether it's maliciousness or just incompetence, who's to say? But there's no reason not to get angry about the whole thing. And speaking of getting angry, one other thing that we need to get angry about. We talked about Bernie S. In prison over the past few weeks. Bernie S. being one of our correspondents who was apprehended by law enforcement authorities and basically imprisoned on $100,000 bail because he had in his possession a red box. A red box being that device that that has five tones emulating a quarter. You know, the sound that it makes at a payphone when you drop in a quarter. If you hold up a box to a payphone and emit those five tones, or actually that one tone five times, you can actually make free phone calls that way. He was not caught making free phone calls. He was not accused of making free phone calls. He was accused of having a device that could be used to do that. $100,000 bail. So the other day, I drove down with a friend to Philadelphia to see him in prison there. I was told what the visiting hours were. And first of all, the directions were reprehensible. They basically gave you directions from Philadelphia. They didn't know how to get there from New York. That's a quote. We don't know how to get there from New York, but here's how you get there from Philadelphia. So I had to figure out how to get to the point that they started from in Philadelphia. So that took a lot of time. The visiting hours were from 7 to 10. And we got there at about, I guess, 5 after 9 or so. And that's when we found out that they have a policy that nobody gets in after 9 o'clock to visit. Even though they're visiting hours, I mean, what's the point of telling people your visiting hours are 7 to 10 if you have to be in by 9, you know? Or at least tell somebody, by the way, be here by 9 or you won't get in at all. The thing is, after driving all the way from New York to see him and you know, meeting with this bullet-headed guy that said this is the way it is, you just know, and you should know this more than anybody, there are no exceptions. There's no sympathy. There's nothing that you can't, like, prey on their conscience or anything like that. They won't say, oh, okay, you drove all the way from New York, you can go in. It's pointless. They have their rules, and that's it, you know? So,
they have a better chance getting a PC to cry.
Ooh, that's a good one. Yeah, that's probably true. So we wasted the entire trip. Bernie S. did not get to see us. We have no idea what's going on with him. We have yet to be in contact with him, and I'm sorry to everybody out there that was looking forward to hearing about this. Next week, though, well, you know, I'd like to say definitely, but who knows? They may have some other regulation, you know, student ties only. I don't know. Who knows what they're going to come up with? So we'll have his story next week as far as what's going on there. Sad, you know, this kind of thing is happening all over the place, and for ridiculous reasons too. Bernie S. is one of the people that told lots of folks at Hope this past summer what the holes were, you know, how it all worked. A lot of security people got some really good information from him. Speaking of security, today is the day Satan has been released, and Fiber, why don't you tell us something about what Satan is and what it means to us?
Well, Satan is a security tool, which we commented on last week.
What does Satan stand for?
Satan actually stands for the Security Analysis Tool for Auditing Networks.
Has nothing to do with the great beast in hell.
No, it has nothing to do with Lucifer or...
I don't know why people made that assumption. Because that's what it spells out, you know? It's not his fault, not Dan Farmer's fault that it happened to spell that.
Well, as the authors of the tool pointed out, if it bothers you, you're free to call it Santa.
Yeah, but then it doesn't make any sense.
No.
You'd have to say, what would you have to say then to make that?
You'd call it the Security Analysis Network Tool for Auditing.
Okay. Maybe it does something different when you do that.
Yeah.
All right, so tell us more about it and how it works.
Well, we should start off by saying that people could die.
That's an actual quote from somebody.
An actual quote about Satan, yeah.
That was an America Online user that somehow commented on the program before it was released.
People could die.
What are some of the other quotes that have come out?
Some of the other quotes are, it's like randomly mailing automatic rifles to 5,000 addresses. I hope some crazy teen doesn't get a hold of one.
Boy.
That was from the Oakland Tribune. We have Satan is like a gun, and this is like handing a gun to a 12-year-old. L.A. Times.
Let's see. Gun analogies.
Oh, yeah. It's like distributing high-powered rocket launchers throughout the world, free of charge, available at your local library or school, and inviting people to try them out by shooting at somebody.
Do you know, there are many countries in the world where newspapers have been described the same way as handing out weapons to people because it's freedom of speech. It gives people ideas, you know? These idiots at newspapers ought to think twice before they say stupid things like that.
The most down-to-earth statement was from the New York Times. It discovers vulnerabilities for which we have no solutions.
Well, that might be so for one or two vulnerabilities, but most of the vulnerabilities it discovers, there are very easy fixes for.
In fact, all of them are.
I mean, it knows send mail technique. It knows...
it knows any number of techniques, and if you don't know those techniques, you will be defeated.
That's right. So... With all that out of the way, tell us some more of the things, some of the frequently asked questions, perhaps.
Well, basically, Satan, for those of you out there who don't know, is an auditing tool for network-based security as opposed to a program like, say, COPS, mm-hmm. which is meant for host-based security. Host-based security being, for example, checking for the security of passwords, checking for the permissions on various important system files, and so forth. Network security is basically banging on all the system services mm-hmm. that machine is running from the outside and just seeing how secure that machine would be as far as whether it would be susceptible to problems with send mail, problems with remote procedure calls, which would allow an intruder to spoof the machine into getting in through something like, say, the remote login daemon, just as an example, or the remote execution daemon, which is usually at the heart of the whole, let's spoof this trusted host and get it to execute a command without ever being on the machine.
Mm-hmm.
So by checking for the fact that these programs are running, it's you could think of Satan as sort of an all-in-one, one-stop shopping security network auditing tool.
You think it's more beneficial to hackers or to system administrators?
I think it's beneficial to everyone. In fact... someone who's the casual 12-year-old who was just handed a handgun isn't going to get as much use out of it as an adept system administrator would, because Satan doesn't just do what it does the way it's shipped to do. It's basically open-ended, and it provides an actual scripting language which is interfaced through Perl. Perl is a really popular scripting language on Unix-based machines, and I've actually seen versions for Macs and PCs as well. So it's the scripting language of choice for web users. And as people know, Satan is accessible with Mosaic or Netscape.
And I think that's really the only way you can use it.
Yeah, the only way you can use it is by interfacing to it from Mosaic or Netscape.
Can't just type Satan at a prompt and have it work that way.
No.
Okay.
But the open-endedness makes it extremely useful as a security tool, because if you find that Satan doesn't check for some bug that you're aware of or some new bug that comes to light, it can be added to Satan to actually check for that bug.
Mm-hmm. So it's user definable then.
Yeah, it's besides all the bugs that it checks for out of the box, or rather out of the tar file when you FTP it off the net, it's very flexible.
Very interesting. And do you have a site where Satan can be obtained?
Yeah, Satan can actually be obtained, to my knowledge, from fish.com, which is where it originated from.
At 4 p.m. today.
At 4 p.m.? Was it 4 p.m.?
I think 4 p.m. was the time I was told.
4 p.m. Greenwich.
Oh, is it Greenwich time?
Yeah, so it was available from 10 o'clock this morning.
I see. Okay. Well, we've been running it a few times on a few systems and got some interesting results. I know a lot of systems decided to go off the net today, thinking that that's it's like the Michelangelo virus, you know. Just turn your computer off and go outside today. As if tomorrow everything is going to be fine. You know, it's not going to go away. And you do well to get a copy of this and run it, or have your system administrator run it and decide if there are any vulnerabilities or not.
Well, in some ways, I guess then Satan was useful. Mm-hmm. You could say, Satan's coming out today. Turn it off. Go to the park.
Maybe. But I do think people need to have a fire lit under them sometimes to actually confront the issues.
Yeah.
And if there are security problems, this is the only way you're going to ever actually fix them.
Yeah, you can really only run away from evil for so long.
That's right. Well, Satan is here now, and we must all deal with it.
Yep.
So I'd like to know how that turns out. By the way, we both have new email addresses as of this week.
Our
site has finally gone up. 2600.com is reality, and we're still constructing it. We're in the process of putting up FTP and worldwide websites, but you can actually now mail us. Your mail address would be fiber@2600.com.
That's correct.
P-H-I-B-E-R.
Yep.
And our the Emmanuel at 2600.com. That is our address from now on, E-M-M-A-N-U-E-L. And what a lot of fun that was, setting that system up. I think it's very secure, too. I think considering some of the... I don't want to be issuing a challenge here, but I think it's secure. I mean, maybe it's not... The thing is, you know, with the net, you can never be surprised when something proves to be insufficiently secured. I've had it happen many, many times over the past few years, and it's always been a learning experience. So, by all means, I'm open to more learning experiences.
Yeah, there's always some new bug yet to be discovered.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, we'll probably discover it very quickly if there is a bug out there right now. Okay, our phone number is 212-279-3400. The program is Off the Hook, and we're talking about all kinds of neat things today, including the release of Satan and ISDN, people in prison, and whatever else is going on in the world of... God, I hate to say the word cyberspace. But speaking of cyberspace, there was another program on tonight on
yes,
Discovery. It
was
called Cyberspace, I think. What an imaginative name that was. What did you think of that one? I think it could have been a lot worse, but then again, they didn't really do anything different.
No, it didn't really drive any point home. Well, at least we can be thankful for that. They could have drove the point home that hackers are evil, but they didn't do that.
Well, they certainly left it in people's minds that hackers could be evil.
Could be.
You had that artist guy, you know, that wanted to put paintings on the net, but he was worried about hackers. I don't understand.
Right.
You want to put your paintings on the net. What are hackers going to do? What, are they going to draw graffiti on your paintings or something? he never really, you know, completed the thought.
Yeah.
He just said he was worried about hackers, but not how. What, are they going to steal the paintings?
Yeah.
Keep a copy on your Macintosh or something. I don't know.
Well, likewise, though, I mean, on the flip side, at the beginning of the show, they did comment on how hackers actually built the internet at major universities.
Yeah, those black and white photos
of
hackers of days gone by. that was something. All stills, too.
No,
they didn't move back then.
No.
Well, it's another look at the net, but and you got a good look at BAI again. But, you know, they never thank BAI. They always thank NBC News Archives and all these other, you know, weird organizations. But they never thank this radio station here, and they should, because if it wasn't for this place, a lot of what we say would never be heard by anybody. And, you know, all of our listeners out there, I don't know, you'd have to hobble along with the likes of CompuServe and America Online and people like that have their own little agenda. This way, at least... You know, you actually have a chance to say something yourself and to ask questions. But enough talking about it. Let's actually do it. Let's take some questions and comments. Good evening. You're on the radio.
Hey, good evening. It stinks. You drove all the way to Philadelphia and you didn't get to see Bernie?
We drove past Philadelphia, in fact. We went past the airport and everything. Yeah, we had quite a tour of the whole place. But, it was pretty annoying.
Fat. You should have clobbered that guy.
Well, you know... While there may be some advantages to clobbering a guy inside a little Checkpoint Charlie thing that works for a prison, I couldn't help but think of all the repercussions that might follow such an event. So, yeah, I clobbered him in my mind.
Well, that's probably for the best. It's nice to hear you give a plug for BAI there. You guys are into radio. You guys are into telephones. I was wondering if you could give me any pointers on... equipment that would be beneficial in trying to win radio station contests. Say I pay attention to the rules for maybe 5 or 10 different contests at different radio stations, and I flip around the dial during the afternoon if I'm free, and I want to be that first caller, that 95th caller, whatever it takes. What are some good approaches or good equipment that you could recommend?
Can we patch Agent Steele in?
Yeah, Agent Steele and Dark Dante might be the proper people.
Well, now, how did they do it back in California? Keep in mind, though, they got caught.
Yeah.
So that's something you don't want to have happen if you do something like that. These guys actually managed to get Porsches out of the deal.
Yeah.
Which
Well, actually, if we look at the example of equipment needed as from that West Side newspaper, it's pretty much the same. Normal PC. And
well, you need
load.
Some knowledge, too.
Oh, yeah, well, forgetting that part of it, but...
I think that's what the caller is after, is the knowledge part
see.
Of it. Now, basically, most people are given one of these, what, 955 numbers whenever they give a contest out?
I don't think they use those anymore.
They don't use those anymore?
No, more and more I see radio stations using 800 numbers.
Really?
Yeah, so they can have callers pull over on the road and call them toll-free.
Wow. And, of course, they don't stay on for long.
No.
So it's not much of an expense.
Yeah.
I guess, yeah, they can do that. Okay. Now, the 955 exchange, though, was kind of a choke exchange.
Yeah,
it only allowed, say, two calls from one central office to go through.
Right. That was to keep the whole telephone network from clogging up.
So how does this keep the phone network from clogging up?
Well, it doesn't. But I guess nowadays they don't care about those kinds of things anymore because, you know, we have the intelligent network.
Well, I guess one way around it would be to find out what the real phone numbers are. That's always... you know, a way to get by certain restrictions. If you can somehow engineer your way into the radio station and figure out what all the phone numbers are and how they correspond, for instance, okay, give you an example. We give out 279-3400. If we were to say we're going to take the 20th caller, well, maybe you dial 279-3420, and that would be line 20. And, of course, that line would light up before all the others because you would hop in on that one and all the others would jump one by one. That's one possible way of doing it, a very simplistic way of doing it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or you could pay one of 9X's computers a visit and disable everyone else from reaching the station and so that only you can get through, which is basically what Agent Steele and Dark Dante did in California.
If you, say, install call forwarding on one of their lines and have the all the calls forward someplace else to, say, a busy signal, nobody would know any better. They would hear a busy signal. They'd assume they didn't get through to the people at the radio station. Who knows? Maybe all the lights light up anyway, and they don't know what it means. But you come in on the one line that is not forwarded, and you know the phone number for that one. Everybody else calls in on the regular number, and they get forwarded, but you know the line one step above. This is all things I'm coming up with off the top of my head right now. You think along those lines, and I'm sure one day you'll figure out a way to get into a whole lot of trouble.
Well, it gave me a whole bunch of stuff to work with, and I'm gonna get cracking.
Okay. Well, good luck there.
Thanks.
Thank God we never have contests here. All the ammunition we feed to our listeners. All right. Do you think we should issue some sort of a challenge somehow?
For radio
right, let's see if anybody can be the same caller like twice in a row. All right, that's a nice simple thing.
Oh, people do that all the time, don't they?
Not twice in a row. We have sometimes, you know, Rebel gets on twice in the show.
Yeah.
But I want to see someone get on twice in a row.
Oh, okay.
That's a simple thing.
Okay.
All right, let's see if anybody can do that. 212-279-3400. And if they do, what?
Then
they'll win.
Then we praise them somehow.
Yeah, they'll win praise. They'll win praise over the air. That's the highest thing you can attain. Good evening. You're on the radio.
Emmanuel, Jeopardy Jim here. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
Was home watching the 10 o'clock news on Channel 5. They had a thing that spy shops across the country got busted today.
Yes, I heard that myself. Something about selling eavesdropping equipment. You know more?
Not tremendously much. What they were... selling were apparently small hidden cameras and microphones. Seemed illegal, if a bit underhanded to me, but then again, isn't most of life like that? And that was it. But the interesting thing is, supposedly customs is involved. I don't really understand why.
They were supposedly illegally smuggled in. I don't know why you'd have to illegally smuggle microphones and chandeliers and whatever else they used into this country. You could easily make those devices here.
Yeah, I'm surprised that this stuff is illegal. I had never heard that. The use of it was illegal, but the ownership, possession? I mean, what if you want to monitor your babysitter and make sure she's not beating up on little Emmanuel, if/when he is it?
Right.
The thing that bothered me was at the end of the reporter, Penny Crone from Fox News, said that if you've left the paper trail from purchasing these, customs will be knocking on your door.
Wowee.
So, a word of advice to all the listeners, tell them that you bought this for a friend in God knows where and come up with a fake address for your friend.
And maybe join him there.
Maybe what?
Maybe join him at that fake address.
That might be good if you've bought a lot.
The way things are going. Okay, thanks for the info.
Okay, check your email later.
All right.
Bye.
My email at 2600.com. Wow, how exciting. It's really neat to be able to look at a machine and know that that's where your mail actually is. You know, it's in this machine. It's not somewhere in California. So that's something. Yeah, the spy shop scandal. Who knows? I'll be in all the papers tomorrow, I'm sure. But supposedly it happened at spy shops all over the country at the same time, all raided for selling illegal monitoring devices. Well, speaking of monitoring devices, I've been playing with that frequency counter I brought in last week. That's a device that allows you to walk up to a transmitter, and it will read off onto the frequency counter what the frequency is. So if I walk up to the BAI transmitter on top of the Empire State Building somehow, it'll say 99.5 FM on it, and I'll be able to figure out that's what's transmitting off here. Well, I've been driving all over the place and walking all over the place, and I found some pretty interesting things. One of the most interesting things I found, well, apart from baby monitors and things like that, they're kind of neat. You know, you see a frequency for a baby monitor, you tune to it, and you hear a baby crying. It's like they know what it's for. This is a baby monitor. It means I got to make baby noises here. I mean, people leave them on all the time, so you hear all kinds of noises going on inside someone's home, and they don't realize how powerful these things are. The whole neighborhood can be listening in. But apart from that, the thing I noticed that I thought was really interesting was driving down the expressway, Long Island Expressway, right at the Nassau-Suffolk border. I picked up this weird frequency. It comes over as 513.24 megahertz. And I tuned to it on the scanner, and it's a very, very powerful signal of absolute silence. Absolute silence. And you know what? I'm able to receive that signal throughout Long Island, well into New York City. And it's extremely powerful, never makes a noise, and nobody knows what it's for. So if there's any radio people out there, please turn your scanners to 513.24 and tell us what that is. Don't you love mysteries?
Sure.
That's the kind of thing you have when you play with devices like this. You constantly are finding things. You know, you find if you're next to a police car and he happens to speak into his radio, you'll get the frequency in a second. You'll get it. So it's neat for those people that want to know what's going on. All right, let's take another phone call. 212-279-3400. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Okay. Let me turn.
Going to turn down the radio.
Okay, hello?
Yes.
I'm a little nervous. I'm a first-time caller.
Oh, that's okay. Nothing to be nervous about.
I have a question. It's going to sound a little bizarre.
All right.
How much can someone find out about you if they just have your first and last name?
Well, with a first and last name, let me give you an example. I've got a CD-ROM database.
Uh-huh.
Now, with a first and last name, I can look up everybody in the country with that first and last name, and narrow it down from there. I can then say, okay, everybody in this state, everybody in this city, everybody in this area code. Yeah, I can find the person eventually using those methods. Once I find the person, then I have an address. I can look up the address in various other databases. You know, it's a lot of our lives are on computer now.
What about financial records, all that kind of stuff?
If it's in a bank someplace, if it's registered somewhere under that name, and if you can get somebody's social security number, you can find out an awful lot. I don't know.
So you need the Social Security number, though. But that's not too hard to get?
It's not too hard to get because you give it to so many different people. I mean, you might give it to your cable TV company. You might give it to your newspaper deliverers. You might give it to the phone company.
Well, you don't need a Social Security number to look up a credit history. All you need is a name and address.
Oh, great.
Yeah, it's our lives are pretty
Because I think somebody might be doing that to me. That's all.
But what are the indications you have that someone might be doing that?
Things that were said. There were some things that were said. That's all I can say.
Uh-huh.
That only I would know.
Uh huh.
Bits
of information like something paid late, maybe, or.
Actually, it was more about. I subscribe to a sports magazine.
Uh huh.
And I was sent. You know, they wanted me to. You know, to get a credit card, and it's. I mean. The sports organization wants me to get a credit card with their, you know, name on it or whatever.
Okay.
Because they got my name off of the mailing list from, you know, my subscription to this magazine.
Okay.
So I sent something to somebody and somebody else found out about it. That's all I can say.
Uh-huh.
But I just wanted to know that.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, they share mailing lists. You don't have to put up with this kind of thing. You can tell them don't... you know, don't share my name with anybody. Keep the you know, the mailing list private. And they really do have to do that. If you catch them not doing that, they can be in a lot of trouble.
Oh, okay.
But the thing is, there are so many.
It's already out now.
Yeah, there are so many different places that have your name and address that it's, you know, what I always do is I always give a slight variation on the name and address. That way I know exactly who's talking to who. So if I see that,
right.
If I see the name spelled a certain way, then I know, hey, these people get, you know, got it from these people here. And that way I know who's talking to who. And I think that's at least the first step. I mean, these are all realities, but I wouldn't stay up nights worrying about it, because it's really it's almost like a no-win situation.
It's at this point. They can find out your driving history and everything else. So
yeah, that's actually
okay.
Your driving history is actually something anybody can find out by writing to the motor vehicle department.
Okay.
I think it costs $1.50 or something, and anybody can find out, if I'm not mistaken. I know that was outlawed in California, but I believe it's still legal here in New York.
Oh, that's terrible. I didn't know that somebody could find... Okay.
Yeah.
I thought that you needed a social security number, but okay.
All right. We wish you luck.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
It's something when people realize how vulnerable they are. And this is not because of hackers that it's like this. This is the way the world is being built, and we just happen to be playing around and figuring these things out. It's really something. Anything you've discovered in the over the years that surprised you?
I think too many things have surprised me.
Uh-huh. As far as tying together different databases and things like that, you know, computers talking to other computers and building this vast source of knowledge on individual people.
Well, it's obviously extremely dangerous, the fact that things are getting more and more integrated and digitized, or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, the more things get online, the bigger the threats are. And I think that people aren't really stopping to think how often their personal information is collected and stored and bought and sold, mm-hmm. and so on. And that you can't necessarily hide behind your social security number. In fact, that shouldn't even be used as a form of ID in the first place. That's supposed to be illegal, according to the Social Security Act of... What is it, 1936?
I think. I'm not sure, but that's been changed, I think. That's been, for so long now, it's been used as your name in many, many, many instances. I think, you know, the best defense is education.
Strong offense.
Well, that too. I was going to say that. But, you know, what is wrong with using aliases, different names, different social security numbers even, as long as you don't use it to steal, to pilfer in various ways? Keep your address private. Use a P.O. box. You know, there's no reason for people to know exactly where you are. There's no reason for you to have your phone number listed under your name. You can have it listed under somebody else's name. There's all kinds of ways to protect your privacy. You just have to use your imagination a little bit. That's really what it boils down to. It's certainly not going to be done for you. All right, let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yeah, good evening, Emmanuel. How are you? Missed off my phone. Finally got through. Bell Atlantic IQ card.
Yeah.
I had gotten one last year. My wife's name was spelled wrong.
Uh-huh.
The password, the four-digit code, I'm not going to say anything. When I called up to get a new card with the right name, the same password is on the new card.
Really?
I'm surprised they didn't change it. And then I'm using the card for the first time. I mixed up two digits. The operator will say, gave it to me and told me the right combination. That's all.
The operator told you the right password.
Basically, yeah.
Wow. Did she at least say, well, guess again, or that's real close, or anything like that?
Pretty close.
But she actually finished the sentence for you, though. She said, this is what the password... That's incredible. It's just... It seems to amaze me how helpful they are. These phone company people. Okay.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
Thanks for calling. That's something.
Yeah, interestingly, the trend that they're going to with calling cards is kind of funny. If you remember, calling cards started out as your 10-digit phone number with a 4-digit PIN at the end.
Mm-hmm.
This was shown to be insecure, because if someone knew that you had a calling card and they already knew your phone number, all they had to do was find out what just 4 more digits were.
Right.
So they came out with calling cards that were all just a scrambled 14 digits. Now they're going back and they're saying, no more scrambled 14 digits.
Make it something easy.
Make it something simple and easy to remember.
You can remember, like your phone number.
Yeah, your phone number.
There you go.
That's something new.
So we've come full circle.
Yep.
We're back to where we started. But you know, there's something else even more interesting, and that's the new calling cards that are actually words. You seen those ones?
No.
You can spell out your own calling card.
Wow.
Yeah, so, you know, your calling card could be, say, the word doghouse, all right? That's your calling card, plus a pin.
Hmm.
Now, I was on the phone with AT&T. They're the ones that offer this, and I was asking, well, what if someone else has doghouse, you know? And then, you know what they told me? They said, well, if that's the case, we'll tell you that that's already in use. And I'm like, wait a minute. All of a sudden, now I can find out other people's calling card numbers thanks to you. That's really handy. All we need is the pin now. It's not too hard to do. Okay, 212-279-3400. Good evening, you're on.
Yes, hello.
How are you? Yes, go ahead. Okay, well, we require people to say more than just that. It's nice, but we do require a little more than that. Good evening, you're on.
Yes, good evening. Just two bits of information. The caller just before who was complaining about people possibly snooping, she can, among other things, it won't cure it, but she can write to the Direct Mail Marketing Association, I believe. I don't know the number. They might even have an 800 number. That might help cut down on the problem to be inundated by junk mail. Now, you were saying a little while ago, I think, that you needed two lines because you had trouble, you know, you wanted one for, let's say, email, another one for voice, another one for data.
Yeah, you know, you want to separate them, one for voice, one for database.
Right. Well, I don't even own anything resembling hardware except my little Casio little notebook. But there's a Mac User magazine, May 95, that talks about a bit of hardware for Apple users that is and enables you to distinguish in it whether an incoming call is a voice, fax, or modem, enabling you to use a single line for all three functions. And I have the information. They have an 800 number, et cetera, if you want to pick it up.
Sure, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Let's see now. Yes, maybe I would have write to you this. Let's see. Well, it's under GeoPort technology. It emulates a modem and software, blah, blah, blah. Apple. It cost about $130, mm-hmm. and you need to spend a little more. Let's see now. 800 number. Okay, adapter kit. Anyway, the Cypress, this might be correct. 408 area code. This is for an adapter kit, GeoPort Telecom adapter kit. This is an upgrade for the above. They can give you information on the whole thing. It's 408 area code 752-2700. And it's if you want to read about the whole article, because I don't want to take up the time, it's the Mac User Magazine, May 95, page 102. There may be more software like that.
All right. Well, thanks for updating us.
Okay. By the way, did you ever find out about the false information being given out as to what kind of line you had when you tried that experiment about 2 weeks ago?
What are you referring to?
Oh, to find out whether I think you had a certain grade of phone line enabling you to upgrade your own line to the fiber type of technology.
You mean the ISDN?
Yeah, the ISDN. Yes.
Well, we do know that it's not entirely correct. When you call 1-800-GET-ISDN and you enter your phone number, sometimes they'll say it's not available when it is.
Yes.
And actually, we have yet to actually get it.
Oh, I know. It was about whether the caller ID would show up ID. You were transmitting it or not. That
right.
was totally erroneous.
Yeah, there are. It seems to be getting that wrong, too, where it's saying that your area does not yet have caller ID when, in fact, it does.
Yeah. Would the Public Service Commission maybe try to help them get their act together, or shame on you, or what can be done?
Well, it would be nice, but let's be realistic here. The Public Service Commission really can barely figure out how to work a phone themselves.
Okay. Oh, man, good program.
All
Thanks.
Right. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I think the caller kind of missed the point. We don't care what type of call is coming in. We
right.
want to be able to use voice and data at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I can usually tell whether an incoming call is voice or data because I don't get incoming data calls.
Yeah, and usually the incoming voice calls respond when you say hello.
Yeah, and the other thing just...
Most of them.
Yeah. word to the wise, stay away from GeoPort adapters.
Why is that?
Because it's a product that is... Well, GeoPort adapters are kind of big with PowerPC, Power Mac users.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a particular product that has all kinds of nightmare stories associated with it as far as getting it to operate properly, to the point that people that I know, at least Power Mac users, don't use it and avoid it with a passion.
All right. Let's take one more phone call. Good evening. You're on.
Hi, Emmanuel. I'm just turning down my radio. I got two phone lines here, and I was trying to do what you asked someone to do before, try to call in two times in a row. But
couldn't do it, huh?
Get a line. Now, I had it a couple of times, but it cut off.
But you didn't know. You didn't know for sure that you were two in a row, though.
Yeah, there's no way to know until you pick it up.
That's true. Like, right now, you're the last call on the sequence, so I don't think that you're the next call, because there is no next call.
I was probably blocking myself, then.
Maybe.
From calling in on the second line.
That's
all right, well,
possible.
Let me just take one more second and tell you that my father knows Morse code, and you probably already know this, but when you turn on the Scout, it spells out
Scout.
S-C-O-U-T.
That's what I thought it was doing. That's the frequency counter. It plays itself in Morse code. Well, that's good that somebody was able to figure that out for sure, though.
Okay.
All right, thanks for the info.
Take care.
Well, that's our show for this week. Next week, do you think we'll get anywhere with ISDN?
Somehow I don't think we will.
Is this ever going to happen? Might have to move to another state to get it to work.
We might have to turn to the cable companies sometime in the future.
There you go. They're coming to town in a couple of months, I think.
Really?
Yeah. All kinds of competitions on the horizon. So beware, 9X. Your days are numbered. All right. That's our show. On that ominous note, we're going to leave it. We'll see you again next week for another edition of Off the Hook. Good night. The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. Couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. For me, you're bound for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood. For me, you
evening. In the news tonight, the circus arrives in Washington and some Democrats liken the big show to the acrobatics and sleights of hand being performed by congressional Republicans. The CIA and State Department are taken to task for their roles in Guatemala, and in our region, a look at the imminent decline of health care for the elderly and concern over the planned reopening of one of the world's most poorly run nuclear power plants. With these and other stories, I'm Jose Santiago in New York, with Verna Avery Brown in Washington, and this is the news for Wednesday, April 5, 1995. First to Washington for the Pacifica National News.
The final peg of the GOP contract with America is being hammered down in the House. The five-year, $189 billion tax cut measure offers a $500 per child tax credit for many families and a reduction in taxes for many corporations. It's expected to pass later tonight. President Clinton commented to reporters on the Republican plan.
I do not believe that it's wise to have a tax cut of this magnitude where, with the deficit we've got and with our need to invest in our future and our children, where 1% of the people get 20% of the benefits and 12% of the people get half of the benefits.
House Budget Chair John Kasich says by voting for the Republican tax cut plan, the Congress will be shifting power away from Washington and back to their communities.
The beauty of what we do today, we not only give you tax relief, but we also have more deficit reduction, $60 billion more in deficit reduction than the entire president's budget. And you know what? When it comes to deficit reduction and balancing the budget, you ain't seen nothing yet.
The GOP plans to celebrate the end of the first 100 days of Congress later this week.
The acting head of the CIA today denied allegations that the spy agency took part in or covered up the murders of American Michael Devine and Guatemalan rebel leader Efrain Bamaca Velasquez. Senator Alphonse D'Amato says he's sorry if he offended anyone when he used a mock Japanese accent while criticizing O.J. Simpson trial judge Lance Ito, a Japanese-American. The New York Republican says he was just making fun of the pomposity of the judge and the manner in which he's dragging the trial out. But Japanese-American groups are charging D'Amato's pidgin English is exactly the kind of attitude that allowed Japanese-Americans to be put away in concentration camps in World War II. A coalition of environmental groups today launched a $1.8 million ad campaign against the Republican contract with America.
Now, the polluters are back.
Jack Pope of the Sierra Club says the spots are designed to inform the public about efforts to roll back environmental regulations and on the link between the current Congress and those who pollute.
The 1994 election was a multi-billion dollar leveraged buyout of American democracy. It's not only the campaign contributions you see up here. It is the hundreds of millions of dollars that were poured into advertising campaigns, think tanks, bogus stories, the whole paraphernalia of corporate America trying to stop 25 years of environmental progress in its tracks.
Conservatives have argued that regulations need to be eased because they cost businesses far more than they are worth. Egyptian President